there's no such thing as being too Jewish.
Thank you very much.
Shalom, and welcome to the Too Jewish radio show with Rabbi Sam Kohan and friends, a weekly serving of everything Jewish. We'll have a great hour together today of news, music, comedy, and conversation. This morning, Rabbi's guest is Israel Ellis, author of The Wake-Up Call, Global Jihad, and the Rise of Anti-Semitism in a World Gone Mad. We'll also have a visit from our expert on the international Jewish scene, Tom Price. Please email your comments to us at TooJewishRadio18@gmail.com or visit us on the web at TooJewishRadio.com. The opinions of the host and guests on Too Jewish are their own and not those of the radio station. Too Jewish is paid for by Too Jewish Radio Programs and Podcasts, Tucson, Arizona. And now, here's Rabbi Sam Kohan and Too Jewish.
Shalom. It's the Martin Luther King Jr. weekend, and it's important to remember the moment in history in which Dr. King came to prominence, the 1950s and early 1960s. You know, it's not as though race issues in America have disappeared, of course, but let's look back for a moment to how it used to be. At that time, the 50s and 60s, much of America was segregated. The South was famously and overtly racist. It was a time when the concept of a black American president was an impossible thing to imagine. When future President Barack Obama was born in 1961, there were Jim Crow facilities throughout the American South. Most blacks couldn't vote there. There were segregated bathrooms, segregated restaurants, segregated buses, and on, and separate by no means meant equal. Schools throughout the North, that's the North, were also segregated, although less obviously so, but still with blacks and whites in effect attending different educational institutions of very different quality. In large parts of America, black Americans had to sit in the back of the bus, drink from separate water fountains, use toilets outside the building, eat in different restaurants, and stay in inferior hotels. In 1968, when Obama was 7 years old, we're the same age, I personally remember this precisely, Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. was shot to death by a white racist in Memphis, precipitating race riots throughout the country. Changes occurred because of the civil rights movement and because of the courage of the marchers at Selma and elsewhere, and with the support of a free press and of principled white and black activists, many Jewish ones, who sometimes paid with their lives. Things began to change as soon as the Civil Rights Act was passed in 1964, but it took time for real transformation to take place. Many whites and many Jews marched with King, inspired by words of his when he wrote, "When Moses walked into the courts of Pharaoh and thundered forth with the call to let my people go, he introduced into history the concept of a God who was concerned about the freedom and dignity of all his children, active in the affairs of men, struggling relentlessly against the forces of evil that beset them, seeking to mold a people who will serve as his children as partners in the building of his kingdom here on earth." Rabbi Abraham Joshua Heschel famously wrote a letter to Dr. King after marching with him in Selma in 1965. In it he said, "Even without words, our march was worship. I felt like my legs were praying." King understood that racism against one minority is racism against all minorities, that vicious, bigoted hatred must be resisted solely because it is wrong. And he said so.
"My Jewish brothers and sisters said to me amid anti-Semitism anywhere, 'We don't need your support. We have enough Jewish power to deal with this problem ourselves.' I would still take a stand against anti-Semitism because it's wrong, it's unjust, and it's evil. If my Catholic brothers and sisters said to me, amid bigotry toward Catholics, 'We don't need your support in this because we have enough Catholic power to deal with it,' I would still take a stand against bigotry toward Catholics because it is wrong, it is evil, and it is unjust."
It's also notable that much of the civil rights legislation that overturned segregation was written in a Reform Jewish institution in Washington, D.C., the Religious Action Center. Black and Jewish activists and lawyers crafted the very laws that began the transformation from overt segregation. We Americans have strange attitudes about race to this day. Not long ago, our president for 8 years was a black man of these same United States. He was elected twice in a row to the highest office in the land by a majority of the electorate. He held the most powerful position in the world for 8 years. This is the kind of fact that proves that America is indeed the land of opportunity. But this is also the land in which his successor, Donald Trump, who will be inaugurated president again tomorrow, spent years pretending that Obama was born in another country, falsely claiming he wasn't a real American. And many other Americans somehow believed this claptrap. Some may still do so. Racism comes in many forms. The Black Lives Matter protests in the wake of the killing of George Floyd in Minnesota in 2020 demonstrated that racial tension and overt racism and overtly racist acts are still huge issues in America. Frankly, not enough has changed because of those protests. And as you may remember, back in the summer of 2017, the Charlottesville racist rally, which was deeply anti-Semitic, demonstrated that there is still a vicious strain of race hatred that crawls out from under rocks. Of course, the incredible rise in overt anti-Semitism, especially on the political left since the beginning of the war in Gaza, has been disgusting. That some of that anti-Semitism is spread throughout the same black community is ironic and sad. And of course, the level of racism available for easy viewing on social media, they've taken away some of the controls now, swell, and all over the internet for that matter, at any and every moment, is horrifying. The Reverend Martin Luther King Jr. spoke against all biases vigorously, including anti-Semitism, and we Jews are acutely attuned to that prejudice and need to be so in a period of rising anti-Semitism. The horrific anti-immigrant rhetoric has focused mostly on Latino asylum seekers, on economic migrants, and I guess on Haitians in Ohio. It demonizes people in the most vicious, false, and opportunistic ways. It provokes violence. These are also truly awful expressions of racism and frighteningly prevalent in our country today. We know that anti-black racism remains very much an American problem nearly 60 years after Dr. Martin Luther King Jr.'s assassination. The work of combating these biases and hatreds belongs to all people of good conscience and moral fiber. It is all of our problem in America. This King Weekend should remind us it's not a long-solved historical issue of the past. It's with us now. And friends, we have work to do. Play us in on this King Weekend morning. Here's a setting of a beautiful passage from the Talmud. Because of my brothers, sisters, and friends, Leman Achai V'Re'ai, out of the house of God I say peace to you, Shalom Bach. Leman Achai, a setting by Yitzchak Rosenthal of Shalsheles, sung with the Maccabees. Leman, Leman, Leman Achai, Achai V'Re'ai, Achai V'Re'ai, Adabra, Adabra, Na, Shalom Ba, Shalom Ba. That was Laman Achaiver AI, sung by the a cappella group Shalshelis and the Maccabees. Because of my brothers, sisters, and friends, I say peace to you of all races and backgrounds and religions. This is the house of God. I seek the best for you. Our guest this morning is an international security expert whose son serves in the IDF in Israel. His name is Israel Ellis. He's the author of The Wake-Up Call, Global Jihad and the Rise of Anti-Semitism in a World Gone Mad. He's got a lot to say about a complex situation. He'll join us in just a moment when we return here on Too Jewish. We welcome to Too Jewish our guest this morning. Israel Ellis is something of an expert on international defense. He is the author of the new book, The Wake-Up Call, Global Jihad and the Rise of Anti-Semitism in a World Gone Mad. Good morning and welcome to Too Jewish.
Hi, Rabbi.
So tell us what prompted you to write The Wake-Up Call. I should note 10-7 is the kind of, it's not in the official title, but it's definitely all over the book.
Sure. So I think everybody following October 7th has this sense of, I want to do something. What can I do to help? And we, my wife and I, our family, we have one of our sons, his name is Eitan, has served 280 days in the Army as a reservist, as a special team. He has served in the South and the North on all the borders of Israel. Obviously, as a parent of a lone soldier, this is quite a bit for us to deal with. We have traveled through Europe and through Israel and all over wherever we go. When we got to Israel last January, we, you know, I started talking to people, and what's on the tip of everyone's mind is how. How did something like this happen? I myself have these questions. I think we all have these questions. How could such an event take place? How could our military have failed us? How could and how does the rise of anti-Semitism at the speed in which the trajectory in which it has become probably, you know, probably strongest since 75 years from now. How does that happen? And so I started listening to people because people want to speak. And I started to really think about it myself. I wanted to understand. And I started talking to many of my contacts in the Shin Bet, in the Army. I went down to the border with Gaza. I walked the trajectory of the terrorists right up to the Kibbutz Be'eri. And I started to see the magnitude of what happened, and it kept on bothering me, the question of how. And so I started to think about it, and I wrote a book that basically deals with seven observations surrounding the question of how when it comes to October 7th.
A lot of us wondered about that. Funny, I was in Israel in January last year. I didn't see you there. It was quite a time to be in Israel. I don't think I've ever seen the tenor of the country the way it was. What was the first answer that you came up with?
The first observation we made is that this did not happen in a vacuum. And in fact, this has been happening. This is leading up 75 years. It's likely Israel is just a pawn in the greater hegemonic struggle between the East and the West. And I know that that might say, wow, that's like, you know, really a perspective that is broad. But in the book, I get into how I make that observation. And at the end of the day, what is happening right now and what has happened and what led up to October 7th really happens to do. One of the reasons I identified is a lot of the power struggle in the East and West leading up over the last 75 years, the ideological development of different polarities and the whole world, if you will, in terms of what the struggle is and why is Israel struggling so much to defend itself and defend its sovereignty. And so I answer that question as the first observation.
We will talk much more with our guest this morning, Israel Ellis, about what's gone on in Israel, what's going on with anti-Semitism and the global jihad when we come back in a moment here on Too Jewish. Beit Simcha, the House of Joy, is a wonderful Jewish synagogue in northwest Tucson in the Catalina foothills. We are celebrating a great array of services, classes, and events this winter. Established 6 years ago by congregants and me, Rabbi Sam Kohan, Beit Simcha has created a vibrant, vital community that strives every day to serve God with joy. A progressive congregation in Northwest Tucson and the Catalina foothills, Beit Simcha is open to everybody throughout the metropolitan area, providing weekly Shabbat services, youth and adult education academy courses, social justice opportunities, outreach, and cultural Jewish programming. Join us in person for Shabbat services, or come on Facebook Live. Go to our website, BeitSimchaTucson.org, BeitSimchaTucson.org. We welcome members and guests in our sanctuary in person. Call 520-276-5675 for more information. Religious schools available for school-age children and grandchildren. Join us in our fabulous Hebrew school, Bar and Bat Mitzvah programs, Torah Tykes Experience, Confirmation, and Teen Programs, all in a fun, relaxed setting with great Jewish learning. Go to BeitSimchaTucson.org, BeitSimchaTucson.org. Beit Simcha services, classes, and events are open to everybody. Come in person. Friday night services are at 6:30 p.m., always followed by a delicious Oneg Shabbat. Saturday morning, Torah studies at 9 a.m. Services are at 10 a.m. All of our services are also broadcast on Facebook. Facebook page is BeitSimchaTucson, Beit Simcha Tucson. Our all musical services are in person and by virtual experience. All of our Adult Education Academy classes are taught live and on Zoom, as is Torah study. You can access those. Go to BeitSimchaTucson.org, BeitSimchaTucson.org. For more information about Beit Simcha, to come to services, religious school, Torah Tykes programs, Bar and Bat Mitzvah, confirmation, high school programs, our rich array of Adult Education Academy courses taught live and on Zoom, and all of our services in person and on Facebook, go to BeitSimchaTucson.org, BeitSimchaTucson.org, or call 520-276-5675. That's 520-276-5675, BeitSimchaTucson.org. Join me, Rabbi Sam Kohan, the fastest growing Jewish congregation in all of Southern Arizona. My friends, if you have a question, comment, compliment, or criticism, kvetch or kvel, email us at tojewishradio18@gmail.com. That's tojewishradio18@gmail. Or go to our website, tojewishradio.com, tojewishradio.com. You can hear all past and present shows through the website, streaming us from there, downloading us from the Apple iTunes Store, is a very popular Jewish podcast, top 10 in America, according to Moment Magazine, over 250,000 downloads on Podbean and on Spotify, post a rating, review To Jewish wherever you listen to us. Those comments help. The stories we share last a lifetime and are passed down from generation to generation. Known for our compassionate commitment to the families we serve, Evergreen Mortuary and Cemetery has faithfully served the Tucson community and the Jewish community for over 100 years. We help thousands of families plan and carry out celebrations of loved ones in unique and special ways and assist them in sharing those lifetimes of stories meaningfully. The most beautiful and tranquil final resting place in all of Southern Arizona, Evergreen's tall pines shade peaceful grassy fields. You can count on Evergreen for superior service and the highest degree of integrity. Our informative, well-trained staff is here to assist you with a full range of on-site services. Call Evergreen, 520-888-7470, 520-888-7470. While we serve the whole community, our experience conducting Jewish funerals, Reform, Conservative, and Orthodox, is second to none. We have sections dedicated to all religious faiths, can help you arrange for your future needs or your immediate ones. Whether you choose to hold a traditional funeral service or a completely individualized ceremony, either in person or online or both, our goal is to help you create a meaningful, personalized service based upon your unique needs in a place of reflection, tradition, and serenity. Evergreen Mortuary and Cemetery offers the best to the community and to you. Call 520-888-7470. To speak to a family advisor at Evergreen, call 520-888-7470. We welcome our expert on the international Jewish scene, Tom Price. Good morning, Tom.
Good morning, Rabbi.
So one of your favorite countries, not typically thought of as a Jewish hotbed, is Montenegro, where you've gone a number of times and have a friend who's from my hometown, a Chabad rabbi there, who's doing all kinds of outreach and expansion. But the expansion of the Jewish community there at a time when Jewish communities are shrinking all around the world is very interesting, and it's growing for complicated reasons. Let's talk about it a little bit.
Right. I mean, in the face of all these shrinking or disappearing Jewish communities, it's nice to know there's at least one country, however obscure the country might be, where the Jewish community is growing by leaps and bounds. Now, first of all, I think many of your listeners may not know exactly where Montenegro is. So,
yes, that is entirely possible.
It is a tiny mountainous country wedged in between Albania, Macedonia, Bosnia, and Croatia.
Sort of part of that old Yugoslavia area there.
It was one of the constituent republics of the Socialist Federated Yugoslav Republics. And its capital used to be called Titograd. That city is now known as Podgorica, which was the original name before there was a Tito. That is the seat of the chief rabbi, who is the man from Los Angeles who's done a terrific job and who is my source for much of this information. But there's also an annual conference in Budva, which is a coastal town, lovely resort town, an old Venetian trading port and fort. And that is a conference called Machar, which, as you know, is the Hebrew word for tomorrow.
There we go.
And it's mostly Jews from the former Yugoslavia who either still live in the former Yugoslavia or who live in exile in Canada or the U.S. or Switzerland or somewhere else, but come back on a yearly basis in October for this big, big Jewish conference. So that's where I met the Chabad rabbi who functions as the chief rabbi of Montenegro. But he's no longer the only rabbi of Montenegro. There is another rabbi in Budva, which now has a synagogue and a kosher restaurant. And whereas at the beginning of his...
By the way, a kosher restaurant is more than we can really say about Tucson, Arizona.
Correct. So this rabbi in Podgorica, at the beginning of his shlichut there, there was only one town, one commune in the entire country where Jewish celebrations took place. And that was high holidays, annual Passover Seder, annual lighting of the menorah at Hanukkah time. And that was the capital of Podgorica, where this rabbi lives. Well, that has quickly spread. And that one city has now become like 15, where Chabad puts up these giant menorahs for Hanukkah, and they do public lightings in a public square. And the number of Passover Seder kits that they give out every year has gone up from 25 or 30 to several hundred. And that means that several hundred self-identifying Jews in Montenegro are observing Passover in one way or another. And even according to this rabbi, he does a service of hanging mezuzahs on the doorposts of Jewish homes.
Always fun.
Anybody who wants one. And Chabad supplies them for free and the blessings and all that. And in his first year there, I think he did like three. Now he does like a dozen a month.
Ooh.
So that's like a humongous increase.
That's a lot. Yeah. So where do all these people, are they, these are Jews that are moving there from?
I think the answer to that is pretty complicated. First of all, there are Jews who were born and raised there, but who never lived openly as Jewish. They might have been half Jewish. They might have been, in the eyes of the Orthodox world, not Jewish because only their father was Jewish,
right,
not their mother, whatever. They didn't self-identify as Jewish. That's part of it. A big part of it is a lot of Israelis are moving there for, currently for security reasons, because so much of Israel is unsafe to live in, but also before that, for economic opportunity. It's a growing country that will someday be in the European Union, and there's a lot of potential there for making money. And the other thing is, both Russians and Ukrainians fleeing the conflict between those two countries, it's a very pleasant place to live. It's the whole country is like a giant resort. You're either on the beach or you're up in the mountains, and it's very attractive. So to function as a rabbi there, you need to speak Russian and or Ukrainian.
Right.
You need to speak English. You need to speak Hebrew. You need to speak Yiddish, and you need to speak Serbian.
Other than that, there's no requirements.
Right.
Tom, thanks so much. We will talk next week.
I look forward to it.
It's time now for our old Jewish joke of the week, Jewish humor, your Bubby and Zadie knew, brought to you by Too Jewish as a public service. One day, Bernie's trying to pull out of a parking place, but hits the bumper of the car parked in front of him. To make matters worse, the incident is witnessed by a group of people at the local bus stop. Bernie gets out of his car, looks at the damage carefully, takes out a pen and a piece of paper, writes a note, sticks it under the wiper blade of the car. This is what the note says. Hello, I just hit your car and there are people here watching me. They think I am writing this note to leave you my name, phone number, and insurance information. But I am not. That was the old Jewish joke of the week, special feature of Too Jewish, just for you. You should live and be well, and don't be like Bernie. And now a word of Torah. This week we continue the narrative of the truly greatest story ever told, the tale of God and Moses liberating our people from slavery and bringing them to freedom and redemption. Our portion this week, Vayera, continues the dramatic showdown between Pharaoh, the king of Egypt, and God. Vayera is filled with the supernatural. God brings plagues upon Egypt that cause untold suffering, not just to lordly Pharaoh, but to the ordinary folks living everyday lives. The stakes rise continually. A narrative builds in power. Plagues strike one after the other. Pharaoh several times agrees to free the Israelites, only to repeatedly welch on the deal. At the end of Vayera, we sense that it's all building to a climax, which we will see in next week's even more dramatic tale of the actual exodus from slavery to freedom. In our own time, we've seen the might and terror of natural disasters, the awesome destruction of volcanic eruptions and tsunamis, the overwhelming wildfires that burn up so much of the places we love and care about. We understand our own powerlessness in the face of such destruction. Without comparing the divine role of each, we can still understand the message of our portion. We are not the ones truly in control. That power and command belong to God. When Pharaoh rails against that simple fact, he is foretelling our own contemporary need to pretend that we are the ones in charge. It's just not so. When we, like Moses, acknowledge God's power and control over nature, when we come to understand that it's all really in God's hands, we, like Moses, can focus on doing the things we do have the power to accomplish. Caring for the sick, helping the needy, consoling the bereaved, protecting what we can of our environment, seeking justice in our own nation and the world. May we learn to do so speedily and soon. When we come back in a moment, our guest, Israel Ellis, author of a new book about the global jihad, discusses what he believes we ought to do to counteract it. Find out when we come back in a moment here on Too Jewish.
We continue with our Too Jewish update on news of Jews around the world with commentary from Rabbi Sam Kohan.
Finally, after 15 months of brutal captivity, an agreement to release the Israeli hostages held by the Palestinian terrorists of Hamas was completed last week. Israel and Hamas have agreed to a deal that will pause the war in Gaza and see the release of Israeli hostages held in the enclave and of Palestinian terrorists held by Israel. The agreement is expected to start today, a 42-day ceasefire in which the Israeli military, the IDF, will withdraw from some parts of Gaza, accompanied by aid going into the Gaza Strip, as well as an exchange of Israeli hostages held by Hamas for Palestinian terrorists held in Israeli prisons. The next phase, still being negotiated, will bring the release of all hostages, a full Israeli withdrawal from Gaza, and a permanent ceasefire, at least according to outgoing President Joe Biden of the U.S. The first 6 weeks of the deal are expected to involve the release of 33 hostages, including Americans Keith Siegel and Segui Dekel-Chen, said a senior Biden administration official. In addition, the dead bodies of most of the hostages murdered in captivity will be returned to Israel for burial. Until now, these victims of Palestinian terrorism have been ghoulishly held by the Hamas terrorists as a form of emotional torture to their families in Israel.
Israeli officials believe 98 hostages remain in Gaza and about 60 remain alive. Israel estimates that 1,200 people were murdered in Hamas's October 7, 2023 war crime attack. 405 Israeli soldiers have been killed in its military operation in Gaza. The agreement was brokered with an almost unprecedented level of cooperation between the Biden and Trump camps, said a senior U.S. official. U.S. President Joe Biden said talks will go beyond the temporary ceasefire to a phase two that could include a permanent end to the war. We certainly hope and pray so. Israel is bracing to receive hostages who have been held in brutal captivity by the Palestinian terrorists for over 15 months. They will undoubtedly need extensive medical, psychological, and spiritual support as they try to return to life in Israel. The agreement was finally brokered with the Israeli and Hamas representatives present in different rooms, with mediators from Qatar and the U.S. going between them. Palestinian Islamic Jihad, another Palestinian terrorist group, joined the negotiations late in the process. They also hold some of the Israeli hostages. Many things can still go wrong. There is very little trust between the sides. A hard war has been conducted since October 7, 2023. Jews everywhere are thrilled that the hostages may finally be able to come home. But it's hard to see how leaving Hamas in any position of power in Gaza can lead to a long-term peace. As past two Jewish guests Seth Frantzman wrote in the Jerusalem Post, Hamas has thrived for 40 years on being underestimated. It assumes this will happen again. It assumes it can kill large numbers of Israelis and kidnap as many people as it wants and get away with it. It's done this in the past and always has been rewarded. Hamas is not gone until it is. The danger to both Israel and Palestinian civilians remains acute. Around half the adults across the world hold anti-Semitic beliefs and deny the historic fact of the Holocaust, according to the latest edition of the largest global study of anti-Jewish attitudes, supported by the Anti-Defamation League. The study surveyed more than 58,000 adults from 103 countries and territories, representing 94% of the world's adult population. It found that 46% of them, which, when extrapolated to the global population, would equal 2.2 billion people, display anti-Semitic attitudes. A fifth of the respondents haven't even heard of the Holocaust, during which 6 million Jews were murdered, while 21% believe it has either been exaggerated by historians or never happened. There were no questions about Israel on this survey, by the way, eliminating the potential criticism that equating anti-Israel feelings with anti-Semitism would bias the results. The Global 100 survey, conducted by the respected international firm Ipsos, located in Paris, and published to coincide with the upcoming 80th anniversary of the liberation of the Auschwitz-Birkenau death camp, where over 1 million Jews were murdered in the Holocaust, charted a steep rise in anti-Semitism across the globe, including violent attacks on Jews. There's been a surge in these attacks and in anti-Semitism around the world since the atrocities of the October 7, 2023 by the Palestinian terrorists of Hamas and Israel's war against the terrorists in Gaza and Lebanon. In Europe in particular, anti-Semitism has surged much worse in the West than in the East. Jonathan Greenblatt, chief executive officer of the ADL and a past guest of Two Jewish, said the fact that nearly half the global population has elevated anti-Semitic sentiments is nothing short of a global emergency. This is a virus that has spread. It is accelerating and intensifying. Alarmingly, young people are reporting increasingly higher levels of anti-Semitism. 50% of people younger than 35 hold anti-Semitic views. Only 39% believe the mainstream accounts of the Holocaust murder of 6 million Jews. 40% of people younger than 35 agreed with the statement, Jews are responsible for most of the world's wars, an astonishingly anti-Semitic and profoundly false allegation. My friends, there is a lot of work to do.
How do you say to your child in the night, nothing's all black, but then nothing's all white? How do you say it will all be all right when you know that it mightn't be true? What do you do? You've got to be careful. Children will listen. Listen.
And that's the news of Jews around the world.
We welcome back to Two Jewish. Our guest this morning, Israel Ellis, is the author of the new book, The Wake-Up Call, Global Jihad and the Rise of Anti-Semitism in a World Gone Mad. He has security analysis expertise. His son, as you heard earlier in the show, has been serving on reserve duty with the IDF for a very long time, which is an interesting subject by itself. He's the author of Moving Through Walls, The Four Foundations of Living Your Best Life in the Past. So we started to address the question of, you know, what's different now? What has changed? First, this is the highest level of anti-Semitism worldwide we've seen in, well, possibly since the end of the Shoah, of the Holocaust. Israel has been at war now on three, maybe you can count it even four different fronts, perhaps five if you really want to get into it. What's different now? What's changed?
Well, I think that what has changed is that really comes down to where the head of the snake is. And I think the key difference between all of the other conflicts and really anything is that Iran has finally been called out as the foremost sponsor, proxy of terrorism in a global level, not just in Israel, but on a global level. We're seeing a lot of different types of what I call the invasion of the jihad globally, and we're seeing the results of that through this planned syllabus of hate in our education system, not in our edge, but through the idea of media and how people are being fed sort of myths and lies and untruths, and the culmination of what I like to call, or what I call, the woke liberal left that has really risen to a crescendo of the bizarre in terms of this cancel culture and wokeness that has sort of decided that it stands for all sorts of humanitarian principles, but not when it comes to the Jewish people. I think that what happened on October 7th really exposed, opened the eyes of the world to what this is all about. What is the jihad all about? And what is the true goal of the global jihad? In the book, you know, in the title of the book, I say in a world gone mad, and I capitalize the word mad, M-A-D, because that is a political theory that the East and West and the school of thought that is used for conflict based on mutually assured destruction that has worked for the West in terms of its diplomacy, but it's failed now because what the West fails to realize or is just starting to understand is that that type of diplomacy does not work when it comes to the lovers of life dealing with the lovers of death. And really where our own moral compass is being used against us in situations like this, when you are dealing with people who glorify the idea of martyrdom and the loss of life, what are you left with to negotiate with? So a lot has changed as a evolution over years, that it's sort of like the unsaid and the unspoken and the unlicensed has now become public. And there just seems to be this sort of letting out of anti-Semitism, anti-Jewish, anti-Israel sentiment that has just, the world has just gone mad with it. And I think that Israel is the lighthouse and the canary in the coal mine when it comes to the global consequences of what this means in terms of the jihad.
You trace in the book sort of your progress from believing in, I think, a two-state solution. It certainly sounds like the idea that we could all live in peace. Do you think that's not possible anymore?
Look, I think we've lived in peace through a proxy of war. And to live in true peace requires recognition of each side's right to exist. And in order to have that kind of situation, whether some people might call it unrealistic utopian, there has to be a syllabus of respect and coexistence and love for that to happen. I don't think that anything is impossible, Rabbi, but I do think that things are impossible as long as there's nobody to negotiate with on a level that we understand. We are a lover of life. Judaism really is constructed around the idea that life is the holiest and most sacred, and we are sort of designed as human beings to preserve life at the highest level. This type of thinking for the radical jihadists is not where they're at, right? So they're not looking at life the way we're looking at. They're looking at celebrating death. As long as that syllabus exists, I think that peace is impossible to achieve. But if we can move past, if we can educate the future generations, and I would like to believe there's a nonviolent opportunity here of dealing with this in the longer term through education. And if we can educate our children and the future generations about the importance of peace, the preservation of life, and if there is adherence to that, then you can have that type of coexistence, cooperation, and peace. But as long as the most important thing is devalued by one side, unfortunately, there's probably very little to work with here.
You know, you make a very interesting point. You say this is not an Israeli-Palestinian conflict. It's not an Israeli-Arab conflict. It's an Israeli-jihadist conflict. That was never maybe made more explicit than over the last couple of months when a whole lot has changed geostrategically with the collapse of Hezbollah, the collapse of the Assad regime, Iran weakened significantly. How does that affect your understanding of the situation?
Well, I mean, we are in a good position right now for governments in the free world to consolidate their power and legislate against hateful rhetoric and actions and organizations that do nothing but promote this type of conflict and promote the tragedy that happens within the Middle East. The Palestinian people are the biggest victims in all of this, in the sense that what I call the non-refugee crisis has been the biggest scam by organizations like UNRWA, like the UN, because it's big business. And as long as these organizations exist, there's a lot of money being transferred between people. So there's a huge conflict of interest in terms of being able to dismantle these things. I think that we're in a position where we can finally address the Iranian regime, and I pray that the new administration coming into power and that the political system does not falter and continues forward, because we must dismantle this. This is not an Israel-Arab situation. This is not the Muslims versus the rest of the world. This is a radical jihadist crisis where they seek global world domination by any means necessary. And I think it's important that the average citizen understands what this is truly about. That's probably the best I can describe as the situation we're in today.
Ezra, I want to ask a question. It's maybe slightly off the topic of the book, but it's certainly related. 10/7, October 7th, 2023 happened. Various members of the IDF, military intelligence establishment, have taken responsibility and resigned, members of the IDF in general. Prime Minister has never stood up and taken any responsibility for this happening, nor, so far as I can tell, anyone from the secular, the non-military leadership of the country. What do you think about that?
I think that there will be a series of public commissions. I think that this will come out in terms of where the failings were, and there are many failings. I think that the Prime Minister of Israel is a politician, and that there are things that you can do to improve on the situation and resolve it. I think now is not the time to start to get into Jewish, the sort of polarization and pointing fingers. I think this is a time of action and must eradicate the threat of Hamas, Hezbollah, the Houthi, ultimately the Iranian regime. In the aftermath, when we look in our rearview mirror at what has happened here and the result, that we then need to break it down and understand, okay, what went wrong? What I talk about in the book is I talk about the political system in Israel that does not meet the needs of the popular vote. And this is like a major challenge, that we have a system of politics in Israel, of electoral system in Israel, that does not meet the needs of society. And although it's a big ask in the book, I highly and strongly recommend that there needs to be a complete change from proportional representation to constitutional representation, and that we should draw on the U.S. and Canada in terms of their political systems. Not that they're perfect, but we should look for a more representative form of democracy so that we aren't in a situation where the smallest number of people are mandating the priorities and the general policies of the country. It worked before. It worked in 1948 when we were more of a homogeneous type of society.
Kind of the village that you talk about anyway. Israel was more of a village in 1948 than it is today.
That's correct. Today we very much exist in a heterogeneous society that needs broader representation within groups. And the way that the political electoral system is working today is it gives the largest amount of power to the smallest number of voters because of the way the proportional representation system works. And this has to change. And why this affects 10-7 is because I believe, and this is my seventh observation in Seven Observations of House, I talked about Jewish disunity. There is one thing for sure I can tell you, our enemies are watching us. And when we are divided as a people, we are in trouble because they will pounce on us. And leading up to October 7th, there was an unfortunate display of extreme polarization within the Jewish community and within Israel. And I believe that October 7th is a very, very strong warning sign to Jewish people in Israel everywhere that if you do not promote the way of the land in terms of brotherhood and sisterhood that makes up Israel for what it is, if we become divided, then we will be conquered. We must have togetherness. We must be consolidated as one voice, and we must be that powerful unity so that we cannot be conquered. And that, I think, is an extreme, that's an internal matter. I talk about the how of October 7th. I talk about external reasons, and I talk about the world at large. But internally, I do talk about the health of the political system and why things need to be changed in Israel so that we can have more unity.
I want to thank Israel Ellis for a great visit here on Too Jewish. The new book is called The Wake-Up Call on Global Jewish Safety. It's all about dealing with the global jihad regime. Where can people find out more about you? Where can people find out more about the book?
First of all, you can find out all about me on my website, which is israelellis.com. And the book is available on Amazon in print form, in digital form, and now in audio form. It's a very easy-to-read book, I am told. It's filled with information. And for those who have questions about how this happened, what is the wake-up call, what is the aftermath, and want to understand the conflict, this is an excellent resource that I have wrote in order to educate and to provide those answers to people who seek them.
Thank you again, and we look forward to people continuing this conversation and exploring the book. When we come back in a moment on Too Jewish, we'll hear about next week's guest get a final musical play out. The stories we share last a lifetime and are passed down from generation to generation. Known for our compassionate commitment to the families we serve, Evergreen Mortuary and Cemetery has faithfully served the Tucson community and the Jewish community for over 100 years. We help thousands of families plan and carry out celebrations of loved ones in unique and special ways and assist them in sharing those lifetimes of stories meaningfully. The most beautiful and tranquil final resting place in all of southern Arizona, Evergreen's tall pines shade peaceful grassy fields. You can count on Evergreen for superior service and the highest degree of integrity. Our informative, well-trained staff is here to assist you with a full range of on-site services. Call Evergreen, 520-888-7470, 520-888-7470. While we serve the whole community, our experience conducting Jewish funerals, Reform, Conservative, and Orthodox, is second to none. We have sections dedicated to all religious faiths, can help you arrange for your future needs or your immediate ones. Whether you choose to hold a traditional funeral service or a completely individualized ceremony, either in person or online or both, our goal is to help you create a meaningful, personalized service based upon your unique needs.
in a place of reflection, tradition, and serenity. Evergreen Mortuary and Cemetery offers the best to the community and to you. Call 520-888-7470. To speak to a family advisor at Evergreen, call 520-888-7470.
Thanks for being here with us this morning on Too Jewish with me, Rabbi Sam Kohan. Join us next week for another great edition of Too Jewish. Our guest will be Senator Ron Wyden, who's written a new book on chutzpah. Don't miss it. Please join us at Congregation Beit Simcha each Friday night. Services in Oneg Shabbat at 6:30 p.m., Saturday morning, 2, 9 a.m. Torah study, 10 a.m. services, Torah reading, Kiddush, in person and on our Facebook page. Our playout this morning comes from Benny Friedman. Mi Shemamin, the one who believes, has no need to fear. My friends, have a Shavua Tov, a good week, a healthy week, and a week we pray profoundly of justice and peace.
Mi Shemamin lo mefached et ha'emuna le'abed ve'lanu yesh et melech ha'olam ve'hu shomer otanu mikulam. Mi Shemamin lo mefached את האמונה לאבד, ולנו יש את מלך העולם, והוא שומר אותנו מכולם. מי שמאמין לא מפחד, את האמונה לאבד, ולנו יש את מלך העולם, והוא שומר אותנו מכולם. בכל מקום, כל הזמן, יש לכולנו מגדול ועד קטן יומים יפים וגם פחות וביניהם תשובה לכל השאלות יש אלוקים אחד גדול ובעולם הזה נותן לנו הכל בין אפלה לקרן אור את הנתיב אנחנו רק צריכים לבחור וזה ידוע חיים הם מתנה וצפוי והרשות נתונה עם הזה הוא משפחה אחד ועוד אחד זה סוד ההצלחה עם ישראל לא יבטל תמיד על המפה אנחנו נשאר וזה ידוע חיים הם מתנה הכל צפוי והרשות נתונה מי שמאמין לא מפחד את האמונה לאבד ולנו יש את מלך העולם והוא שומר אותנו מכולם מי שמאמין לא מפחד את האמונה לאבד ולנו יש את מלך העולם והוא שומר אותנו מכולם
Too Jewish is sponsored by Too Jewish Radio Programs, Tucson, Arizona.